Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the House Call Podcast, talking equity markets with UBS Asset Management. For today, glad to welcome back Jeremy Zirin, Senior Portfolio Manager of the House View Equity Portfolios and Head of the Private Client U.S. Equity Team, as well as Dominique Shager, Senior Equity Investment Specialist, joining us today from UBS Asset Management. So with that, Jeremy, Dom, thank you both for dropping by and for spending some time today with our listeners. Dom, I'll now pass it over to you to lead today's conversation.
We appreciate you having us on the show. So, Jeremy, I know your mind may be around the Mets and today's potential win versus the LA Dodgers, but thinking about the market, the third quarter was an eventful 3 months. Can you walk us through some of the market drivers, and do you think we're still in the path for a soft landing?
So let's start with a let's go Mets cheer, but really let's start with the second question, Dom. Yeah, from a business cycle point of view, you know, soft landing still seems like the most likely path for the U.S. economy. In fact, more recently, we've been tracking closer to a no landing scenario, meaning that any, you know, slowdown is hardly detectable. Labor market growth has decelerated a bit this year, but only very modestly. And, you know, the 3 month moving average of non-farm payroll additions actually ticked up in September to 186,000. If you look at the GDP accounts, second quarter GDP came in at 3%, and the Atlanta Fed's tracker of Q3 GDP is showing that the economy probably grew at about the same speed this quarter. It's tracking at 3.2% as of this morning. We have seen some pockets of weakness at the lower end consumer, and we've been in the midst of an industrial production slowdown, which has really been stagnating at close to zero growth for the past 18 months or so, and it really isn't showing clear signs of turning yet, positively yet, but it's also not getting worse. But, you know, keep in mind, the U.S. economy is two-thirds consumption, and most consumers are benefiting from solid wage growth in the 4 to 5% range, solid disposable personal income, and the positive wealth effects from rising financial markets and high home prices. So broadly, you know, economic momentum in the U.S. is pretty solid, and there are just very few signals that would suggest the material slowdown is imminent. All of this is happening despite uncertainty over the election, rising geopolitical tensions in Ukraine and the Middle East, and still disappointing growth in China. So, you know, should some of those risks dissipate over the next several months, you know, that would only further support the broad economic outlook here. So overall, we do think that we'll see some incremental slowing in the U.S. and global economy over the next year or so due to the lagged impact on business investment from higher interest rates that, you know, we've seen over the past year or so. But I think we're looking at something in between a soft landing and no landing right now for the U.S. economy over the next 6 to 12 months. For markets, you're right. It's definitely been eventful lately, and we've seen some spikes in market volatility over the past few months for sure. But the S&P 500 just continues to make new all-time highs, including this Monday, which was the 46th record daily close for the index this year. And the main market drivers have been, you know, the generally sanguine economic data and outlook that I just described, as well as the anticipation and then the actual reduction of short-term interest rates by central banks. You know, over the past month, we've seen pivots from both the Chinese and U.S. central banks that, for different reasons, are easing interest rate policy. You know, in China, it's been more about the government trying to hit its 5% GDP growth target, which was looking less and less likely given the soft domestic economic data in China so far this year. And for the U.S., the Fed cut its Fed funds rate by 50 basis points last month, marking the first interest rate cut in 4 years as they begin the process of normalizing interest rates. And of course, you know, the last market driver is artificial intelligence or AI, and that's clearly been a big part of the market narrative all year as spending on infrastructure to build out artificial intelligence capabilities has been ramping up, and many mega-cap AI-levered names continue to do well. I would say, lastly, from an, you know, what's been interesting from a market's perspective in the third quarter is that we are finally seeing a broadening out of market returns beyond the mega-cap technology names and the so-called Magnificent Seven. You know, since the beginning of 2023, you know, large-cap growth stocks have really dominated market indices and consistently outperformed not just large cap value stocks, but almost every other market segment, whether it be U.S. small caps or U.S. mid caps or international. But in Q3, that changed, right? The long-awaited broadening out of equity market returns beyond the mega caps finally did start to develop, and the equal weighted S&P outpaced the actual or market cap weighted S&P in the third quarter for the first time in seven quarters. And, you know, digging a little bit deeper, you know, growth stocks still rose. They did fine. U.S. large cap growth was up 3.2% in the quarter, but large cap value, mid caps and small caps all rose by more than 9%.
So you brought up interest rate policy. With the November FOMC meeting only a few weeks away, what are your expectations for the Fed and how do you think the latest moves will impact the market? In particular, because over the last 3 months, we have seen a cooling of inflation. So kind of trying to get your thoughts there, Jeremy.
Yeah, look, the process of normalizing interest rates is a positive for risk assets. You know, in the current cycle, even after the Fed's 50 basis point rate cut, last month, policy rates are still likely somewhere between 150 to 200 basis points above what is viewed as neutral. But given the strong labor market print last month, the Fed will likely, you know, maybe slow down the pace of cutting rates. So we're unlikely to see another, 50 or jumbo move in Fed policy. But I'd expect that next month in November, we get a 25 basis point rate cut. And then likely, as long as inflation continues to be contained and growth doesn't slow meaningfully below what would be suggestive of a soft landing, we're likely to see a series of 25 basis point cuts, likely one per meeting, until we get closer to a 3% Fed funds rate. Now, you talked about inflation, Don. You know, currently the Fed's preferred gauge of inflation, personal consumption expenditures index or the PCE index, is running at 2.2% year on year. That's just slightly above the Fed's target rate of 2%, and that's down from over 7% in mid-22. So largely, the numbers suggest and the data suggests that the Fed really is winning the war and frankly largely has won the war on inflation, and that, that's likely to facilitate the normalization of rates at the pace that I just suggested. For markets, Fed rate cuts help in a couple different ways, right? First, equity markets ultimately are driven by corporate earnings. And by the Fed lowering interest rates, the earnings power for more interest rate sensitive market segments like housing, autos, and the more levered, smaller sized companies should ultimately benefit. And then additionally, from an asset allocation perspective, lower short-term interest rates reduce the attractiveness of those 3, 6, and 12-month CDs that many individuals have been hiding in because of their attractive yield. So if the Fed cuts rates by another 150, 200 basis points over the course of the next 12 to 18 months, all of a sudden the yield on those short-term bank deposits and CDs don't look quite as juicy. And many will look for higher returns in alternatives, including the equity market. And just to provide some context around that in terms of magnitude, as per the Federal Reserve, right now there's still over $6 trillion in money market funds that is dubbed, on the sidelines, quote unquote, waiting for better opportunities. So there's plenty of dry powder to potentially help stocks from a flow perspective if market sentiment stays healthy and the Fed reduces interest rates.
I'm going to switch gears for a bit. Friday marked the start of the Q3 earnings season. Jeremy, what have you heard so far? And what are your thoughts on what we can expect for the rest of the next couple of weeks of earnings season?
Yeah, it's very early, right? So we've only had about 50 of the 500 or 10% of the S&P 500 report earnings so far for Q3 earnings season. But so far, I would characterize earnings looking fairly healthy. Many of the most influential financial institutions, including banks and investment managers, have reported over the past few days, and results have been viewed positively so far by the markets. Banks are an important market barometer since they provide a lens into consumer spending activities, consumer and business appetites for loans, and they tell us how existing loans are performing, how credit's performing, and that provides, insights into the economy. And so far, not only are bank earnings exceeding consensus expectations and bank stock, financial stock prices reacting positively, the macro read-through from bank earnings has largely been benign. For the most part, we're seeing that capital market activity seems to be in the early stages of a rebound, and that interest margins are feeding expectations, and that credit trends remain, fairly benign. Taking a step back, at an index level, S&P 500 earnings were up 11% in the second quarter And we're likely to see a little bit of a deceleration in the third quarter. Like coming into earnings season, the consensus estimate calls for just, 4-5% EPS growth year on year this quarter. Usually companies beat in aggregate by about 3 or 4 percentage points. So it's looking like we're trending or tracking towards, a high single digit gain down from that, low double digit earnings growth that we saw in the second quarter. Small deceleration, but deceleration nonetheless. I would say that, it's probably closer to or a smaller deceleration that one may glean from the surface. And the reason I say that is that, energy sector earnings are slumping this quarter because energy prices are lower than they were a year ago, and that's skewing the headline number. So if you exclude the energy sector, S&P earnings for this quarter will likely be up, close to 10% or at a fairly similar level than they were last quarter. What are we looking for, in the next couple of weeks? I think the most important companies to listen to will be some of the multinational industrial companies that can give us a better read on final demand and key end markets like China regionally and aerospace, machinery, and automation from an industry perspective. Consumer companies generally report towards the end of earnings season, but I'd expect similar trends to last quarter with resilience being the key theme and perhaps some continued weakness at the low end of the income spectrum, but reasonably robust trends for the bulk of consumers. And then finally, results from big tech companies will be clearly important given that tech is roughly a third of the S&P 500 by market value and how important AI has been in terms of underpinning market returns. And there we're really looking to see, is spending on AI infrastructure continuing to be upsized relative to expectations? And what are we seeing in terms of the more cyclical aspects of technology, meaning in smartphones and PCs, are we seeing signs of a rebound and a refresh cycle starting to take hold? And then maybe just one last point that I'm particularly interested in earnings is that, increasingly we're hearing more and more about the adoption of AI into core business operations for, S&P 500 companies. So whether it's supporting decision-making at the C-suite level, replacing or aiding customer support, or simply summarizing meetings and documents, AI adoption is clearly starting to take hold and be an important productivity enhancing tool for most companies as they increasingly digitize their businesses.
So, Jeremy, another topic that's going to be top of investors' minds is the election. We're only about 3 weeks away. Do you see elections as having much impact on the equity markets?
I think that it's certainly possible that we'll see some short-term volatility around the election. But for long-term investors, I don't think the election should be all that meaningful. So why do I say that? Well, first of all, the data backs that up, right? Stock market data over the last 7 years suggests that the party affiliation of the president has little effect on, long-term market performance over time. And so even thinking about the last decade, right, I think it's instructive. Let's give the example of just the last 8 years. Former President Trump and current President Biden have vastly different views on tax policies, spending priorities, and the U.S.'s role regarding geopolitical affairs. But think about this. From the date that President Trump was first elected president, November 8th, 2016, to the end of his term, or at least when President Biden was elected, Election Day 2020, the S&P 500 generated a total return of 70%. From November 3rd, 2020, when Biden won the election, to the end of last week, essentially Biden's full term, the S&P 500's total return has been 83%, very similar to the returns that we saw in the Trump presidency. So too many times I've seen investors align their portfolios with their political party affiliation, and it proves to be a mistake. I think if you dig into the key issues in this election as it relates to markets, the biggest issue is what happens to corporate tax rates. And so currently corporate tax rates in the U.S. are 21%, and Team Trump wants to reduce that rate to 15%, and Team Harris wants the corporate tax rate to rise to 28%, but probably would have to settle to something around 25, 26% in a divided government. In terms of scaling that potential impact, every 1% change in the corporate tax rate translates to a little less than a 1% change in S&P 500 earnings. So in either a Trump or Harris win, we're probably not talking about more than a 3 to 5% reset in S&P 500 earnings from any potential change in corporate tax rates. And so, yes, there are other issues that could have effects on the economy, both positively and negatively. First of all, you know, one point I like to make is that, you know, given the fact that this election is literally a toss-up, most polls are suggesting, you know, it's close to 50-50. It's very hard to pre-position ahead of the election on any specific election outcome. But given, you know, what, some of the numbers that I just talked about, it's not, to be fair, it's not that important to do so. I think, and most likely a mistake to pre-position, given that I think that the impact, particularly for longer-term investors, is likely relatively muted.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. Thank you again for your insights. And for the audience, please join us next month as we discuss the year ahead.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.